Welcome, listeners, to a sober view of the future with episode 138 of the Nerd Extravaganza podcast. In the future, this podcast will be tapped out on stone tablets. I'm Tom.
I'm Brian.
I'm Chris.
And I'm Cam.
And full disclosure, we don't take so dim a view of the future, but this time around, we will be discussing our modern-day faith in the never-ending march of technology and the impact a halting of said march might have on humanity and the human condition, among other things, for sure. But first, we'll execute a sharp about-face and march back in time a week to bring you tales from the past with our weekly Geekly, Geekly Weekly Update. And Brian, why don't you go first, sir? What have you been up to?
I'm going to go for quality over quantity this week. I was sick. I actually missed Thursday night gaming and Sunday night gaming and all kinds of other stuff. All I did, worth mentioning, was the Steam anime sale. Did any of you guys check that out?
I checked it out. I did not buy.
Same here, really, because there wasn't a whole lot worth buying. But while I was looking through the quote-unquote anime-related games on Steam, I came across Hatoful Boyfriend.
Yes, the pigeon game.
The pigeon game. The pigeon dating sim. You are the only human at an all-pigeon high school.
Wow.
And it's really a dating sim. And apparently it's really poignant and well-written, but I will never know.
You will never know because it's in Japanese or because you didn't pick it up?
No, because that creeps me the fuck out.
Come on, Brian, you're pretty liberal. You're not into the pigeon porn?
Where would you put it?
Hey, man, all you need is a little duct tape.
I was about to say you would put it in the file on your hard drive, but
that's not what I meant. I don't know. I think that's taking furdom a little too far.
Agreed.
Yes.
So, an anime-related game sale on Steam. You did not get the pigeon dating sim.
No, I passed on that.
Is that the highlight of your week?
That is the highlight of my week. It wasn't a very exciting week.
Same here. Let's see if Chris has something more exciting to report.
Well, I'll start off with Kickstarters. I decided to back Tiny Epic Galaxies at the deluxe level. So when it comes in, it's got all the goodies. I'm looking forward to that. And I'd have to say I was pretty focused on being creative, geekily speaking. I was working on a short story about zombies. In addition to that, for Steam, I picked up Elegy for a Dead World, which I don't know if you guys have seen that one or not yet. I think it'd probably make a pretty good writing tool, or maybe for writer's block. Basically, you're kind of walking around this beautiful landscape. It's slightly animated, and at different points, it may prompt you, or if you'd put it in another mode, it's freeform, and you can write about what you're seeing as if you're a visitor to this planet. And then you can share the stories online or the poetry online.
Interesting.
Bought a game that lets you write poetry?
Yes.
Interesting.
I can tell you guys are so excited.
Well, I think that's appropriate for tonight's topic, so that's good.
That might be a hard sell without seeing it.
Yeah, actually the art's really cool. I'll send you guys a little clip for the trailer.
Yeah, sounds cool, man.
Maybe then again it's just a little too artsy-fartsy, but
fraps it for us.
Exactly.
So, gamification of poetry, anything else?
No, that was pretty much it. I was just kind of focused on the, ironically, writing my stuff not on word processor, but with longhand, pen and ink.
Just
to preserve it for future generations when the AIs and Skynet take us down.
Yes, yes indeed. Okay, Cam, over to you.
You know, Thursday night game night at AGS, our weekly staple. That was a lot of fun. Played Dead of Winter, which was a great game. I mean, I've played it before, but I really, really enjoy that game. It's really hard to find right now. If you can find one for under $50 or $60, I'd grab it. it's, you know, it deals with zombies, which is not my favorite genre, but I can look past that because the game is that much fun. Did some, a lot of other gaming, mainly research on the, onslaught of, board game reviews that will be coming to a YouTube channel near you. Saw the movie Woman in Black 2. Not even going to bother doing a game review or a movie review on that one. It sucks. Don't go see it. that's my review in a nutshell. Chris, I also backed Tiny Epic Galaxies. Looking forward to that coming out. And I backed, 12 Realms Ghost Town expansion, which, funded and will hopefully be coming soon. I'm a big fan of 12 Realms, the original Kickstarter. So the, Ghost Town expansion is, has got me, geeked out. And, Brian, you turned me on to the Soda Pop miniature sale. I picked up a copy of the Takaoshi Back to School bundle.
All right.
Which, includes Tentacle Bento, Karate Fight, some little miniatures, the bento box, and some promo cards. I actually got that. I ordered it last week and got it in the mail yesterday, so I'm excited about that. And I think that's it for my week.
Okay, that brings it around to mine, and I'm glad that you guys have had short, succinct roundups, because so do I. Let's see, I attended our game night last week and was pretty exhausted because I've recently returned to the working world and am consequently very tired at night now, again. So I played a quick, well, not so quick, but quick enough game of Battles of Westeros with a friend of ours, Tony. He was gracious enough to teach Steve and I, another player, how to play. Pretty cool. It was Lannisters versus Stark, and I believe the scenario was Battle for the Riverlands or some such thing. Neat stuff. And I've seen a movie. I saw The Imitation Game, which was all about Alan Turing, a personal hero of mine because of his impact on my academic discipline of computer science. It was all about his code-breaking time at, I think it was called Bletchley Park, where they cracked the Enigma code and took down the, well, aided in taking down the Nazis.
Nice.
Yeah, and was very honest in that it showed how that poor man met his demise in the end. It was kind of a sad tale, but what happened to him in the end, considering his contribution to humanity and technology, also very apropos considering tonight's topic. And let's see, in a much more sort of pedestrian activity, I pre-ordered a bunch of amiibos. I may have even done that last week and forgot to report it, but these things are cool. I like collecting them, and a bunch of stupid hoarders / scalpers are buying them up, making it impossible for people to get them, which is crappy, as I think you will agree.
So, Tom.
Yeah.
You did report it last week.
Did I pre-order them, or did I just buy them? Because I know I mentioned that I was hunting for them last week.
Oh, okay, okay. But you are definitely an Amiibo fan.
I am an Amiibo fan, yeah. We're called Amiiboys, actually. I just made that up, but I think we should make that part of the Gamma.
No, it works. It works.
I think that should be our rock band name.
The Ooh, the Amiiboys. Yeah. Nice. Scan us. But yeah, that's pretty much it, and I guess that's my sort of unofficial contribution to our news extravaganza segment. The amiibos are a hot seller, and there are certain amiibos that are difficult to find because people are snatching them up and making them unavailable for others outside of the realm of scalping.
That's
yeah,
shitty.
They are.
That is shitty.
Yeah, so I guess that does bring us around to the news extravaganza segment, and we will just go down the list, and I and, well, all of us will react to breaking stories. Brian, why don't you go first, man? Any news?
So this took my world by storm today, and it's actually the first day I saw the report. It's a little bit hard for me to believe, but apparently they're saying George Lucas was planning on filming Star Wars 7 before Disney bought the series from him. And I just can't. That doesn't compute. No way.
Maybe that was a ruse to drive up the price of the sale.
Yeah.
Like, hey, if you don't want to buy it, I'm going to do it myself, you know?
I would not be surprised if that was true.
I don't know. I'm kind of I thought he had three trilogies in mind the whole time. Not surprised at all to I mean, maybe not this year or anything, but I was sure he was working on it.
Oh, don't you know he didn't have three trilogies planned? He only had two, and that was a rumor. He's rumor someone else started, which is not true.
Yeah. And secondly, this is kind of small, but kind of exciting. Previous guest Steve Kleisath has officially broken the world record for Mario Brothers. He's now the record holder on Twin Galaxies.
Wow.
Yes, indeed. That's amazing. A previous guest and personal friend of mine, Steve Kleisath. Go, Steve!
That is pretty impressive, actually.
It is. It is indeed. The man is a savant.
As long as he's not also an idiot, he's good to go.
I didn't say idiot. I hate that those words are now associated. You assume idiot precedes it. No, he is not an idiot. He is also a talented musician and a cool guy and friend. And I congratulate him. It's a great accomplishment.
Yeah, I think I met him at that. Brian, did I meet him at that the Retro Arcade Gaming Night?
Yes, you did.
Yeah, nice guy.
There's another one of those coming up soon, guys. Just FYI, in our greater Fort Lauderdale area.
Sounds awesome.
Yep. So, Brian, is that it for news for you?
That's it.
Okay, Chris, over to you, man.
I'm going to be a little on the light side. For me, the big news was there is a new Avengers Age of Ultron trailer that came out. And got a few little more sneak peeks at the Claw, and it may be a little bit of, I know I'm going to mispronounce this, maybe somebody from Wakanda. In addition to that, also I heard that Sci-Fi's got a show in the works called 51st State, where we turn Greenland into a prison colony.
Oh,
wow.
I shit you not. I don't know how to process that myself, actually.
That sounds cool, but I will tell you, having traveled somewhat extensively in the United States, we have plenty of states that would already serve very well as prison colony states.
Very true.
I agree.
Well, and pretty much do already with the industrial complex we got going on.
We will veer rapidly away from that topic. Anything else, Chris?
No, that's about it.
All right, Cam, Mr. Political Activist over there with his indictment of our prison industrial complex.
Oh, yes. I love to do that. I got a ton of news, actually, guys. I'm just going to hit you with the headlines rapid fire, and then we can just sort of figure out which ones we want to talk about. Apparently, there is a new steak pill, they're calling it a meal pill, which basically makes your body think that you like ate like a steak dinner when you didn't, and it's supposed to start your body just burning all kinds of fat. It's supposed to be the new, you know, dietary revolution, and you know, make all the obese gamers out there lose a lot of weight. So that's why I bring it up. So obese gamers, look forward to that. Avengers Age of Ultron second trailer came out, looks amazing. Don't know if you guys got a chance to look at that, but it looks absolutely awesome. I know this will tickle your geek pickle, Brian and Tom, because you guys are huge old-school NES fans. I don't know if you saw that the Bandai Family Fitness Stadium Events game is on eBay right now, and you can pick that up for just under $100,000 as the bids sit right now, but I think there are still several days left on the bidding.
Mm.
A huge, huge idol of ours, I know... I know at least for one or two of us, Neil deGrasse Tyson is getting his own late night science talk show. So that will be something I definitely will be tuning into. And two other minor stories, which I thought were hilarious. There is there's this new company called Delsey Pluggage that just came out, and they're starting a line of, we talked about the smart homes last week. They're starting to have smart luggage now, which will charge your gadgets while they're in your luggage. And not only that, but it will weigh itself so that you don't have to worry about, you know, being overweight when you go, your luggage being overweight when you go to the airport. So everything seems to be getting smarter, except for me, unfortunately, these days. And finally, there is a game that was on Kickstarter called Glorious Leader, which basically was Contra. You guys remember that old school NES game?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
It's essentially Contra, but it's Kim Jong-un just like running through and killing like Americans. and it had like Dennis Rodman in it. Like it was meant to be a takeoff. I'm pretty positive of, you know, the North Korean leader, but hackers decided to go in and just shut it down anyway. So they basically have just some hackers went in and just wiped out the whole like company's website, destroyed all their information, and it doesn't look like that game's going to be a go now because they just got just absolutely wrecked by a bunch of I guess maybe misguided patriotic hackers, or maybe North Korea hackers themselves. Who knows? So that was my bundle of news. Feel free to comment, guys.
So for the steak pill, can you take that and then print out some pasta with the Fudini and you're good to go?
I mean, I think it's meant to be not just the steak, but like all the trimmings as well. So you're basically just taking the pill and it's like, it's supposed to be magic. You start losing weight immediately.
Is this a prescribed pill or an over-the-counter thing?
Well, it's not. I'm assuming it's going to be prescribed, but it's not even. I think it's in the very, very. It hasn't even gone to human testing yet. It's just on mice now. Mm. But supposedly, it's like the next big thing.
I do not usually go straight towards the morbid, but I cannot wait to see the first steak pill suicide.
I'm going to end it all.
Overdose on steak.
Yeah. I thought that was pretty funny, but I don't know. Did you guys actually read through the Age of Ultron and all the story arcs in the comics?
No.
Nope.
Okay. I'm really at first when the first trailer came out, I was a little worried about how they were going to do it. Plus, there were so many characters in the comics that probably won't be in the movies because of the shit that we've talked about before with all the different licensing rights, you know?
No mutants.
Yeah. So I was already worried about that, but this new trailer, if you guys haven't seen it, really is giving me a little hope, because if you've read the stories, it's incredibly depressing. It's like one of those, like, you just keep getting kicked in the face, like, every time you turn the page kind of reads, but and it seems like that this movie, they're taking a much darker turn with it. And so that actually kind of makes me happy. It might be a little sound counterintuitive, but it looks pretty good to me. You guys might want to check that out. All the other stuff, you know, I just think kind of speaks for itself. Neil deGrasse Tyson has me excited, though.
My understanding is that he is, or the show will be based on his podcast, Star Talk, which I already listened to.
Yeah.
So that should be good. And I do want to comment on the steak pill that a more obvious solution to like the overweight gamer stereotype you alluded to, Cam, presents itself. That being maybe just eat fewer cheese fries. I don't know.
Yeah, you know, that's always the but I mean, who wants to, you know, go with science? I mean, when you can just take a pill. You know, it's proven science. That's bullshit. You know, I want to take a pill. But the I'm surprised you guys didn't comment on the NES game. I mean, no one's got 90 grand laying around to throw at this.
Not today.
I regret having passed that game up on the Woolworth shelf for $39.99 or whatever back in the day. So
I do wish I had been more into sports.
Yeah, wasn't it kind of a track and field esque game?
Yeah, apparently, okay, it was an early test title that Bandai released to work with their, it was called a Family Fun Fitness Control Mat, which then morphed into the Power Mat. And I guess they only made 2,000 total and only released 200 into stores. So only 200 ever reached store shelves anyway. And then, you know, so I mean, who knows how many have been lost to time and, you know, garage sales and, you know, grandma's throwing stuff out of the attics. And only two are known to exist right now out of that total 2,000 that are still in their original packaging. And this is one of them. So, pretty rare.
Yeah, incredible.
I don't know about 90,000, but, you know.
I guess that's one of those things you would just have to find, luckily, in an estate sale or something.
Yeah.
I'll probably just emulate that one.
Right.
The emulated copy goes for a mere 50,000, so there you go.
Right. I would go from estate sale to just cleaning out Grandpa's basement. Look what I found in a box.
Right.
You never know.
Can I take this little NES cartridge to the Antiques Roadshow, please?
Exactly.
So, yeah, I think that's it for me.
Oh, by the way, is it wrong for me to be more excited about Avengers than Star Wars?
I mean, I think philosophically, yes, but in terms of previous successes, no. I would equate that to being a fair-weather fanboy, maybe.
Based off the last movie each series had, maybe it's okay.
Okay. Maybe I'm just too afraid of being burnt or bit again. We'll see.
You can love again, Chris. Don't worry. We know. It hurts, but you've got to open yourself up.
I don't know. I don't know.
Well, I guess with the news thus covered, we can move on to tonight's topic. And, you know, your mention of the smart self-weighing luggage cam and the steak pill to satisfy the urges of the Philly cheesesteak challenged really gets me thinking about tonight's topic, which is progress, technological progress, and our faith in it, both to provide never-ending new entertainment and to solve a whole laundry list of problems. And I think that's basically kind of the general gist of tonight's topic. Like, what would happen if the oracles were proven wrong and at a certain point the predicted technological advancements didn't arrive and consistently didn't arrive and it started to look like they would not arrive, so that we might not get a steak pill to help you magically lose weight and we might not maybe be able to go to space like we want, and computers might not get faster, and medical technology kind of comes to a halt. Would humanity... I assume there'd be a pretty big die-off if certain technologies failed, but what would the impact be to just an across-the-board or even a very specific halting in technological progress?
Well, for me... To some degree, when you say something like technological process, that is really vague because there are different technologies and everything going on all at the same time. So to have something so across the board would be almost, you know, if computers went down, that doesn't mean that healthcare processes or, you know, advancements wouldn't happen. Or something in architecture or in bioscience. So for me, it's like, when people ask me questions like that, I want to go, well, tell me exactly what process you're talking about and how it's going to happen, because a lot of those questions would have to be answered on a case-by-case basis.
All the smart people are frozen.
Yeah.
Okay, see, that helps. See.
Yeah, take your pick. I mean, if computing technology did not progress, true medical science might progress, but I think it would progress at a slower pace. All of our technology is intertwined now in ways that a lot of us probably don't really appreciate.
Right.
Well, yeah, it's true.
You need the computers to do the complex calculations and the correlations, you know, even if you're talking about, you know, growing putting together a new vaccine or whatever.
Yep. We can't write down directions for a trip on a piece of paper anymore.
Well, I was about to get into that. I mean, to some degree, you're not even talking about technological advancement. You're talking about just flat-out infrastructure, and that's a different story on its own, too. Like, if the computers end up not working at all, then you have problems all the way down to transportation at this point. Now, if they just slow down, that's something separate. There's a really great book called Dies the Fire by S.M. Sterling, where that's what happens, is just somehow the laws of physics change, and computers can't work, and you can't even, what is it? Computers can't work, internal combustion engines have to be retooled, but we have to figure out what went wrong in the first place to retool them, and even fires are much weaker. So, I mean, that was a massive change. I think in the end, basically the SCA found out how to get more horses and took over large swaths of the country.
Yeah, Chris, that that TV show Revolution, I think, was based on that book, right?
It wasn't, but a lot of people said that Sesame Sterling should have gotten a check. So it probably was I bet it was inspired.
Influenced.
Yeah, ripped from the headlines.
Exactly.
But don't have to pay you anything.
Kind of like we have Once Upon a Time with Disney, and before that was, you know, before that happened, Fables was being shopped around, so don't get me started on that.
I gotcha.
I'll say this in response, Chris. I don't think we would need a fundamental change in the laws of physics. I think something as mundane, we'll say, as compared to that, as a disruption in the supply of petroleum would be enough. That our economy, our world economy, and everything it produces is so fragile and so hyper efficient that even a minor disruption in any number of factors would have a ripple effect across the board. If petroleum prices go up high enough and stay high enough, you could see a dramatic decrease in economic activity and progress, which depends almost wholly on consumer demand nowadays.
Well, I see some of that, but I also think that basically what would happen would be a lot of the shift of that technology would go to the more affluent and for those in power, and then basically you would just have a much huger gap between the rich, between the haves and the have-nots.
Okay, so now we come to a potential, to one answer, a potential impact of the slowdown of technology or the concentration of technology in fewer hands thanks to a slowdown would be increase in power, influence, and wealth inequality in the world, right?
Oh, I agree. There's another book called The Wind-Up Girl, which that is the scenario, is that fossil fuels have finally just died off. And the world they literally call it the consolidation or the collapse. Because now people have to remember how to use sailing ships to start things back up again. And he picks up the novel about when, at the point where people are starting to do international trade again. But even though the fuel is gone, they switch over to other technologies and they switch over to genetics to, you know, make up for things. For example, you don't have trucks anymore, but they basically tweak elephants into a new beast of burden that can pull vast amounts of, you know, cargo back and forth.
Do you guys agree? I mean, when I was thinking of tonight's episode, I guess the thing that was bothering me most or that was on my mind most is the almost religious faith we have in technological progress. Tomorrow will be a brighter day. Next year will be better. A decade from now, things will be better. Not just in terms of video games and cars, but in terms of fundamental things, like I'm going to live longer because, you know, until the steak pill comes out, I'm still going to double down on cheese fries and then expect that science is going to come to the rescue with a new heart. That sort of thing. I mean, do we place too much faith in technology? And if so, like what, even if you want to step away from the practical effects, what kind of effect would that have on humanity's mindset if suddenly the doctors were like, dude, you just got to eat vegetables. I don't know what to tell you.
Well, I think that's two separate questions. I mean, I think we absolutely put way too much faith and trust and rely way too heavily on technology. I mean, it's impossible not to today. You know, you have to, if you want to live in society, you have to trust technology is going to be there and it's going to keep working the way we think it's going to work. And if it doesn't, there's going to be a huge, huge ripple effect. You know, so, but I mean, what's the alternative? Go out to, you know, Utah or somewhere and just, you know, build a bunker and live there. I mean, many people are doing that because they think that at some point this, you know, this is all going to come grinding to a halt and everyone's going to be screwed. I feel like there's probably a middle ground, you know, I mean, there probably, if something were to occur, some sort of ecological disaster or some sort of terrorist attack or something that really like put a damper on our technology for a significant period of time where we couldn't get it back up and start things up again. I think humans on the whole are pretty adaptable. You know, I mean, I think we would figure it out. I'm not going to say it would be easy, but I mean, I think there would be a lot of creative destruction.
I'll do a more firm hypothetical. So China owns all the copper mines in the world. And they decide, hey, we're assholes. No more copper for anybody. So all of our electronic equipment stays in its current state until someone can go to back to scratch and develop non-copper using electronics. So we're looking at, like, let's say 5 years for the Manhattan Project to discover how to move forward without that metal.
I mean, that assumes there's going to be no, you know, military solution employed to, you know, coerce China into letting us have some copper.
Or the stock market finds a way to invest in recycling technologies to get that copper out, and people make right. money selling their copper.
I think that would be a great thing, though.
Or we just stop using the penny, which is fucking bullshit anyway. And
Amen. Yeah, and you kind of get, you touch on one of my little hot spots, which is how, especially when it comes to things like fossil fuels compared to technology, how as long as it's going to be cheaper and easier, we're not going to have any sort of real market motivation to take us to backup, to make our backup technologies actually full-fledged fuel technologies on their own. A perfect example of that is I remember when gas was $5 a gallon. All of a sudden, I went from a nice train commute where I could do, I have room to spread out and I could do whatever I want on the train to where standing room only. And people complaining at the same time, ironically, because the train schedule was being cut in half for budget concerns. You know, and then as soon as the gas got cheap again, everybody would get off the train and had nothing but bad things to say about it. People aren't motivated to find alternatives until the easy, cheap ones.
No, you're exactly right. And that's all comes down to lobbyists and, you know, big oil and big money and stuff like that. And that's, I mean, you know, not to sound like a crazy kook revolutionary, but I mean, that might be the best thing to ever happen to, like, solar, all these different alternative technologies would have to be explored to a much greater extent than they are being, than they are now, because, you know, we wouldn't have the cheap alternative that, you know, not only is it the cheapest and the easiest and so ingrained right now, but those people that control those interests are actively, you know, just scuttling the research efforts of all the other alternative technologies. So, I mean, you know, it to me, you know, if you're asking me to prognosticate like last year, I mean, I don't see how society as a whole in 100 or 200 years moves forward without solar technology. That's a you know, big assumption, obviously, because we don't know what other kind of technology, you know, can be developed between now and then. You know, I'm not a scientist, so, and I'm not a, you know, a physicist, so I don't, you know, claim to know what's in the pipeline, but, you know, it just seems to me that we have this free, readily available, amazing resource that's super clean that we could be capitalizing on, but, you know, for the last 20, 30, 40, 50, you know, even longer years, it's been just held down by competing interests.
That's interesting. So necessity being the mother of invention, you think humanity will adapt in the face of a massive shift in the technological landscape?
I agree.
I mean, it would certainly have to. Or we'd go to what, like Chris was saying, we'd have to start using elephants and donkeys again, you know?
Well, okay. In either case, whether we go to better technology in the case of transitioning off fossil fuels to harnessing live solar power as opposed to that stored in those fossil fuels over however long that took, versus, say, regressing to elephant transportation. In either case, what's the lag time? Because a civilization-wide disruption would, I would think, necessarily have a lag time until new technologies could come to the fore to take place of the old ones. What does that do to the human population? Because, as I've mentioned before, I think, or at least my perception of the way things work now, is everything is JIT. Everything is just in time. Everything is just, it's maximum efficiency. You don't have anything sitting on shelves. Everything moves and fills the shelves just as it's bought up. And that has to do, and not just consumer goods, but our food is delivered just in time to fill those store shelves. And you go to a grocery store, they don't have like a whole warehouse full of stuff waiting for you. It's produced weekly, monthly, as needed. If that should all come grinding to a halt or become prohibitively expensive, such that the truck deliveries now are no longer happening, so on and so forth, how much of a lag time is there before we come up with alternatives to keep everybody fed and clothed and satisfied? And how many people die in the interim? And what happens to the population of human beings on Earth?
I guess it boils down to how well martial law is being used.
Yeah, after Katrina, I'm not too faithful in that, but I don't have much faith in that.
You know, and on top of that, I mean, you know, we're talking about something that has, you know, we're talking about our situation, which is a hiccup and a blip on the edge of human existence compared to how it's been waiting for weeks and months and things. And on top of that, you might want to actually think about the whole idea of process this and that, because back in the 1800s, you didn't buy toothpaste. You bought the ingredients to make toothpaste, and then you made it at home. You bought the baking soda, you bought the mint flavoring, and a couple other things, and you mixed it up, and that was your toothpaste. The whole idea of buying a whole tube of toothpaste completely made for you, that was a brand new idea.
I might be alone here, but I wouldn't necessarily mind a little bit of that. I don't want mass death across the globe because no one can get food, but a reason to do things locally wouldn't be so bad.
Agreed.
I agree.
Agreed. You know, the other thing too, Tom, is that, like, you know, food, you know, you can go a long time without, you know, without starving to death. So food is, especially in the state of obesity that our country's in, we've got a pretty good reserve stocked up, you know? So I'm not so worried about that. And if you really look at solar technology, and I hate to keep harping on this, but you realistically right now, you can power a home. I mean, not to where you're running an air conditioner all day and you have a million different gadgets going and stuff like that, but you can heat, you can refrigerate, you can run basic electronics and stuff like that, pretty easily with a very basic solar panel system. So, I mean, I feel like that technology is already very close. So I don't think there would be that huge of a lag time. And, you know, hopefully, you know, between that lag time and, you know, translating it to transportation and other things like that, you wouldn't have too many deaths. But I mean, I think, you know, yeah, all right, maybe we wouldn't be having fresh produce for a while, but, you know, we live right near the ocean. You know, we can go fish. There's canned food that can be shipped, you know, even if shipping times are extended by weeks, you know, or months. You know, like Brian said, we can grow things locally. You know, I would be more worried about an issue if there was no water as opposed to food.
And for a short-term impact of technology, that would be the big thing, is if for some reason the computers didn't work, that would be one of the things that would shut off, would be your water.
I don't know. I think a lot of the water system is based on a simple hydraulic type thing, right?
It's all monitored and tweaked by computers.
Right, but the treatment of it might be an issue. You might have to boil it or, you know, have some kind of tablets. But I think that's why when the power goes out, you still have water, right? But it's just...
Well, part of that, I was just thinking about your comment, was we would start fishing. But, you know, if there isn't anything regulating all the stuff that's getting into the water from industry and from fertilizer, who knows what you'll be eating for a while. And there'll be a few deaths related to that.
I'll take that. Fry it up. You'll be all right.
Yeah, and I can keep ratcheting up, oh, well, you know, what if this happens and that happens? And we can keep ratcheting up the laundry list of calamities all happening at once until humanity just cannot survive. I think, and I'm seeing maybe a pattern that would maybe emerge in the event. And really, we're I don't want to ignore the 8 billion barrel a day gorilla in the room or whatever it is. If we're talking oil becoming prohibitive, which is, I think, a pretty likely scenario at some point, I think what Brian hit on, which is a lot of activity taking place more locally, would probably come to pass as solar technology was manufactured and slowly rolled out. Solar and other renewables were, you know, slowly rolled out to replace the now impractical fossil fuel alternatives, or I shouldn't say alternatives, but former mainstays. So you'd see increased localism, if that's a word. But I think what might save us from a return to provincial thinking and attitudes is, actually, if we can keep it running, the internet. And so information would still flow, which is a great thing. And the internet might actually, in the event of a calamity like this, serve its original purpose, which was to provide a destruction-proof way for society to still function, right? Because it was originally intended to function after nuclear war to keep, like, bases in touch, right?
Yeah, and people would be using it to, you know, connect and talk about where, you know, how to trade goods and food and other, you know, real resources rather than, you know, posting that they just did cardio at the gym or, you know, a picture of their hot fudge sundae.
Yeah, basically toothpaste recipes, how to strain your water, all sorts of, you know, you can go to any survivalist site and find lots of good stuff. I think part of the reason why blacksmithing, which is now an art, not a necessity anymore, is, you know, still semi-alive is because the few blacksmiths that are working are staying in touch with each other on the internet.
Well, that might come in handy if you had geographically isolated pockets of humanity hanging on. It would be helpful to still be able to communicate over long distances virtually. Even, you know, especially if let's say one of the first things to go would be air travel, right? Because that's very fuel intensive.
For sure.
Or at a very least, it would become very expensive for the average person. I think that would greatly increase the importance of worldwide communication networks.
For sure. And, you know, Tom, I mean, let me preface this by saying, like, I am by no means a survivalist nut or a, you know, doomsday prepper or anything like that. But I do certainly have, you know, a store of food and, you know, some other things. And you bring up a good point about the internet. I mean, if the internet is not there and people are, I mean, I would worry more about that than the actual food being cut off. Because once the information flow stops, I mean, when's the last time you wrote a letter to someone? You know, I don't honestly, and I'm not even joking. I don't know that I could even write cursive anymore. Like, you know, because I just don't write anymore. And so it's, you know, those basic skills would need to be relearned and there would be lag time there. And, you know, people that weren't prepared, that didn't have adequate stores, like, you know, of food or of this or that or medicine or whatever it is, would definitely have an issue. And not only that, but I mean, think about, you know, and you bring up a good, both you and Chris brought up a good point about the actual normal information that, you know, like blacksmithing and stuff. I mean, if you look on any survivalist site, they'll tell you, go out and buy 10 books, you know, having to do with plants and which plants you can eat and not eat. How to, you know, basic first aid, basic woodworking, you know, like 10 different categories of books that, you know, if all else failed and you had no kind of, you were totally shut out from the outside world, at least you could crack open that book and try to blunder your way through planting a garden or, you know, making some sort of, you know, basic tool to you know, siphon your water, things like that.
Well, they have a great little video I saw once where it was like, here's how you pick the perfect survival knife that needs to be the right length to be able to hack something but still be able to use it for a screwdriver and the whole nine yards.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's prudent to have some kind of basic stuff like that. I mean, you know, have some books in your house, have a couple months supply of food. I mean, just here in South Florida, I mean, even if you're not talking about a doomsday scenario, I mean, hurricanes come through all the time. And if, you know, the power gets knocked out and emergency services aren't coming, then what are you going to do? You know?
Interesting. So knowledge becomes power in a real sense in that, in a situation like this.
Absolutely.
Let me ask you guys this. On balance, and let's assume a something less than horrific loss of life results in the immediate aftermath, would a disruption, would a sort of event that causes us to question our faith in technology be a good thing for humanity or a bad thing? Or would you rather see us forced into more sustainable living, or would you rather carry on just as we are and have the, like, you know, 7-Eleven artificial heart replacement, you know, in less time?
Oh man, that's a tough question because you're asking, like, you know, do you want the omelet? If you want the omelet, are you willing to break a few eggs?
Yeah, I am.
You know, look, I mean, I condone the loss of life. I mean, obviously everyone has a right to live. But I think as long as if that were going to happen, we got to a more sustainable model of living as a society, then I guess that's the silver lining. I mean, I guess that's the gentle way to put it. I think you would have a ton of people that passed away for no reason except for the fact that they were unprepared. And then if we're continuing on in this, you know, breakneck, fashion that we're on, that we're going right now, I mean, you know, I don't know that we're going to see the effects of it. I mean, we may see the effects, but it might not really affect our lifespan or quality of life. If anything, we might benefit in terms of quality of life, but I don't think any one of us, and you know, maybe one of us will, you know, pipe up, but I don't think any one of us would say that the way that we live now is sustainable for any, you know, for any significant period of time.
Yeah, that a follow on to Cam's point, guys, can we have our cake and eat it too? Can we carry on as we have been, you know, allowing the people who kind of own the fossil fuel pipeline to make all the money they want and then transition seamlessly to solar when they run out of fuel to pump? I mean, can we have our status quo cake and eat the future too?
Well, I guess it's a crackpot conspiracy theory to some degree, but I really think we're seeing progress stunted already by people who put money over progress.
Certainly. Absolutely. I mean, solar could have been a viable option 20 years ago, you know, 15, 20 years ago. I mean, the battery life, if we would put money into R&D for the battery life and for the shrinking of the size of the panels and things like that, I mean, there couldn't have been, you know, there's no reason why most homes in America couldn't be powered by solar now.
So the beneficiaries of the status quo, even if they're not like assassinating engineers and scientists, they are diverting attention, if not even funding, from probably better and more sustainable technologies to technologies that benefit them in the short term.
I would have to say it's a little bit of that and a lot more of just corporate or, you know, financial laziness. It's unproven. It's always the short-term gain. I think it's more just the short-sightedness of short-term gain that's, you know, because if everybody on Wall Street jumped on it like the lemmings they are, we would be able to get more, you know, power to it. It wouldn't have, despite the guys making the money in the back, the guys in the back room, what they'll do is if they see the sea change shifting, they'll just change their money over to the other side. But, you know, I'm sure some of them are influencing it in various ways, but I guarantee you that if you could get Wall Street to see gold on solar, there's nothing the big cats could really do. They would just jump on the bandwagon with everyone else.
No. Chris, you're absolutely right. But the issue, I think, is that it's not corporate responsibility to push that along. I mean,
I agree with you. I'm saying that's the problem. I'm not saying that somehow they need to suddenly change themselves. I mean, there just needs to be a way to get them to see something like that. I mean, you know, there are people working on that. I mean, this week, Mr. Gates drank poop water.
Right. Yeah, I saw that.
I think, yeah, we actually, we all didn't, ironically, none of us covered that in the news section. And what is their hope? Their hope is why this will catch on is because the plant is supposed to make quick profit for those who invest in it. That's their main catchphrase. Not, hey, it's good for your economy. It's good for your community. It's good for you to buy this and prop it up because you're going to make money as fast as you can when people come over to you to drink your water, get your fertilized ash, and there's something else you can pull out of it too. It's like you get three different benefits out of, people pay you for the sewage. It has three different revenue streams.
Right. Well, and that's good. I mean, that's a good way to go about it. I mean, you know, in full disclosure, I'm a corporate lawyer. I've represented tons of companies and I don't have an issue with corporations wanting to make money, or making the maximum amount of money because, yeah, it doesn't make sense for them to throw all kinds of money into solar if they're not going to get anything out of it. My issue is with the people that are already or the corporations that are entrenched already that then go to Capitol Hill and pay lobbyists, you know, $20,000 an hour and, you know, line the pockets of politicians to say, well, hey, I heard that, you know, you were thinking about funding this solar project in your state. Well, you know, all those contributions we gave you last year, you can kiss those goodbye if you vote for that.
Oh, I hear you.
That's the issue I have, is that, you know, I feel like the government, as our elected officials, have a much greater responsibility. I don't care what the corporations do in terms of their own bottom line and you know, running their companies. But when they're actively then stunting the growth of technologies that will benefit society and the government as a whole by essentially bribing politicians that are elected officials to not put money into those technologies, that's shitty.
I agree. And, you know, just a moment, I had remembered something. You know, greed has always been kind of the center of Wall Street, but you have to admit that, you know, earlier, back when we were much younger, you know, our parents and our grandparents, for those who could invest, their philosophy was a lot different. A lot of their philosophy was, we're going to invest in something for the long term. And speculation has become much more of a bigger focus of Wall Street, which is why they're doing a lot of short-term game. So I'm not saying it's supposed to be corporate citizenship, though, hey, if somebody wants to take that on, great. But I'm thinking that on the flip side, you know, Wall Street has changed its views over time, so there's no reason why it can't change its views back. And then another interesting point, speaking of technological process, progress, part of what's going on with Wall Street now is that, what is it, just the actual humans trading on Wall Street are now a much smaller percentage compared to the, you know, to the financial algorithms that are, like, doing it at microseconds.
Yeah.
You guys have definitely done a lot to drive home. Basically, Brian's point was to discuss the obsession over short-term monetary gain and bugger all else. And the corporation, as we understand it in our society, exists only to maximize return to investors. Correct. Is that potentially an Achilles heel for society, especially when the technological direction of our society, of civilizations around the world, is kind of driven by the pursuit of wealth? And I'm going to let Brian take this one, I think. Can we reimagine your basic corporate charter so that in addition to seeking profit, which we agree it has definite benefits in that it drives an economy and generates jobs, etc., corporations are also obligated in their charter to have some responsibility or to do just a little something, like maybe 20% for the common good, 80% for their own? Does that make any sense, Brian?
Don't television channels have to have X amount of public service footage?
Broadcast channels, right, but
that's because they lease the airwaves. They're governed by the FCC, and those airwaves are leased. Those airwaves are technically owned by the government and the people. So that's why the government and the FCC can exert control over that. Same way, like, you know, if rail cars are using the railroads, which, you know, might be owned by the, you know, by the government, they can force them to do certain things. But if you're just a private corporation doing your own thing in a state where, you know, there's no regulations, you can do whatever you want.
Well, I would argue that if you're considering airwaves as a delivery method, most highways are government owned.
Sure.
Their delivery method.
For sure.
You could probably work in a, if you use our electrical system, our highways, our water, we don't have data, but we should, that you have to meet certain philanthropical.
Well, now we're getting into taxes.
Well, I mean, I think it's more of a, I think you make a good point, Tom and Brian, but I think we're focusing first on the solutions, possible solutions, rather than looking at what the original problem is. And that is, you know, when the government was set up way back by the framers, they were amazing. They were extraordinary individuals. They set up this checks and balance system with the three branches of government, and that was great. But no one at that time ever envisioned the power of the corporation, which has almost set itself up as the fourth branch of government at this point. And there is no check on that branch, if you want to call it that. So you have now these corporations and big money, big oil, big whatever, influencing policy on every different level, on the state level, local level, federal level, the courts, executive branch, certainly, you know. So it's like, what do you do then? And that this sort of gets back to what you guys were talking about. Then, okay, we are where we are now. So no one envisioned it. What do we do about it now? I don't know. I mean, I tend to take a laissez-faire type attitude, you know, creative destruction. But the problem is that when things like the mortgage crisis happened, where these companies, they fucked up, you know, mm-hmm. and they should have just gone the way of the dodo if they fucked up too much. But instead, then you have the government coming in, propping them up and putting them into the same position that they were before. Like, you know, there's no responsibility now for them. And ultimately, the people who got hurt are you and I and the people that ended up having to fund it and pay for it.
I'm going to digress for a second and also say the corporations assumed the fourth estate as well, the press and the media.
Agreed.
Yeah, for sure.
I want to run with a take on creative destruction because, Brian, do you remember we watched Alien last week?
Yep.
Maybe that's what planted the idea for this episode in my head, because I think Alien is a tale, or a cautionary tale, regarding corporations run amok. Weyland Yutani is an evil corporation. Their reaction mm-hmm. to finding a possibly hostile alien life form is to tell the android, get the alien, the crew's expendable. Okay?
Right, and bring it back to Earth where it could destroy everyone in, you know,
right.
on the planet.
Yeah. Right, which is awful, but you know what? We're so obsessed and single-minded because our only goal is to generate a return for our investors that the potential to weaponize this dread creature is all we give a shit about. That's how narrow-minded we are. Mm-hmm. And now we're putting a nerdy spin back on this whole conversation. But here's an idea for some creative destruction. How about instead of creative destruction just in the quote-unquote free market, there's a little creative destruction within our government. The people put their foot down and say, no. You can definitely set up a corporation. It definitely has certain rights. We definitely don't begrudge you your profits. However, you were always inferior to the will of the people. You will always submit ultimately to the will of the people, and you will not do harm as you go about your economic activity. If you do, you will be held accountable. And I understand a corporation is not a person and cannot, you know, sit down in court and receive a sentence, but it can be fined, it can be taxed, it can be dissolved by the people, in theory, can it not?
It would be so easy to just not shop somewhere.
Yeah.
Well, for me, you know, the whole idea of, you know, don't do evil. Then what happens to all, you know, the weapon makers and people who, you know, design rat poison and things like that? I mean, that some of those questions get pretty complex pretty well. For me, my pet peeve with Wall Street is not that that does profit, but it's never enough profit. Like, a company just can't be profitable. It always has to be more profitable than last year.
Yes.
Where people start to jump ship. That's the big key is if it's not more profitable, nobody has faith. Nobody has any tenacity to stick with the investment. They just jump off to the next big sweet thing, and allegedly sweet thing, and that's it.
You guys are bringing up, you know, my basic philosophy on life, which is the only way to get anyone to do anything is to provide an incentive, and mm-hmm. because self-interest is always overriding. Until we evolve into a Star Trek, you know, higher form of consciousness, where, you know, we understand that it is, you know, good business to look out for each other and not always act in self-interest, then the only way to get anyone to do anything, whether it is the government, whether it is a corporation, whether it is, you know, John Q. Public on the street, is to incentivize them to do it. So if you want them to, if you want companies, like you said, Chris, to invest dollars into solar or alternative technologies, you have to make it economically viable for them. If you want the, you know, if you want a person to agree to, you know, let something happen, you've got to put something in it for them. And so the only way I see anything happening is to is to, you know, you gotta put a carrot on the end of the stick to get anyone to do anything. And so, and even going back to your point, Tom, if you want companies, people to invest their dollars into new companies and to invest their, hard-earned capital and put it at risk, for the good of society to create jobs and to push the economy, you have to not take away their incentive of reaping profits. Because if you then put, you know, restrictions on that and say, well, yeah, okay, you can make profits, but you've got to do X, Y, and Z. And, you know, that basically puts them, you know, in a position of saying, well, why am I even bothering? Then you're going to grind, you know, private investment to a halt. Well, so I think it's a delicate balance there.
And that's what I'm kind of asking for, is a balance. I don't want to discourage economic activity and entrepreneurship. I just want there to be a playing field across the board that everybody's on. So nobody gets unfair advantage. Everybody has to abide by these certain rules and has to provide this sort of return on investment to society that society demands. Right. So cronyism would obviously just completely shoot something like that in the foot. And I guess what I'm looking for is the bridge from where we are to the future, because I think we're on the Weyland-Yutani alien path right now.
For sure.
And I want to get on the Star Trek path where we look past that, past profit, past personal gain, which isn't to say that you don't have your own life and your own desires in Starfleet, but the greater good is also in your mind, right?
Right.
Well, a lot of that is cultural change.
Yeah.
I have a question.
Hmm.
It's a multi-tiered question, so stick with me for a minute. Where is the incentive for Bill Gates to spend billions out of his pocket fighting malaria in third world countries? And follow-up question, why are we still buying Apple products instead of Microsoft products when they're pretty much as reliable, but they're just not pretty?
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah.
Apple's a horrible company.
Yeah, well, the incentive there is the cool factor and the functionality and whatever. But I mean, to your first question about Bill Gates, I think his, you know, once you get to that level of being that rich, I mean, it's not even money anymore. I mean, it's this sort of noblesse oblige, you know, where at that point, money is not an issue. You have whatever you want. Anything you want is at your fingertips. Then it goes to a whole different ballgame of what can I do to set myself apart from the other rich guys? What am I doing? You know, what am I doing to set myself apart and put my mark and leave my legacy? And that's when you know, if you just look at like the Rockefellers and the Dukes and all, you know, that's why all these, you know, universities got founded. That's why the Metropolitan Opera got founded. That's why it's because these guys then get to the point where buying, you know, trivial things don't matter. Now they got to put their stamp and their name on things. And that's, you know, that's just a function of ego. That's his incentive.
Well, to speak geekily, there's actually two scientific answers to that question, And one's called the Maslow Hierarchy of Needs. I don't know if that rings a bell with anybody.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And it's a pyramid for our listeners who don't know. And and basically your basic needs are at the bottom. Your physiological needs to make sure that you have food and you feel like you can actually have a place that's safe to sleep and you're not like halfway awake at the time hoping a saber tooth or a gang member doesn't like bite you in the back in the middle of the night. Then there's love and belonging, which can be like a really nice spouse that knows you very well, or, you know, hey, you feel very confident with your spouse because you have billions of dollars. Then there's esteem, the ego we talked about. And then the last one is self-actualization, where basically, you know, everything is met. So you actually now have time to think and ruminate and go to the next level. I know some, you know, there's probably some people out there who think the whole idea of self, if everyone else's needs was met, that they would actually look inner versus just being lazy is an alien concept to them, but it's, you know, a scientific fact. Another one is, as people get older, they kind of shift their needs from like what I want, what I need to feel like I'm validated to, as they get older, they want to be a mentor. They want to find people and give lessons and give benefits to their friends and their family around them. They want to be, you know, basically kind of be the man on the mountain who's heard for, hey, I've got some stories to tell you. So, to some degree, Bill Gates fits both of those criteria at this point in his life. I mean, he has everything and anything. As far as I know, his marriage is great, or, you know, at least average. And on top of that, he's at that point in his life where, you know, he wants to be able to be seen as, you know, a father figure and a mentor.
Right. Like I said, ego and legacy. I mean, that's what it comes down to.
My greater point was Bill Gates is there. Steve Jobs was not. Who do we just reap our praise and money upon?
Don't forget Warren Buffett.
Well, but I'm making a direct comparison between two companies. I'm not right, so sure he's involved.
Yeah, no, you're right. You're right. And I think that's probably a function of marketing, right?
Of people being easily led to make poor decisions that destroy their own worlds?
I mean, that's what marketing is basically, you know, it's getting you to buy the book, you know, but, you know, not judge the, by judging the book by its cover, you know, what we were all told not to do when we were kids.
Yeah.
Well, you know, back in the day, I think we're remembering Microsoft a little, you know, we're talking Bill Gates, but Microsoft, the company itself, I don't think has ever been seen as anything other than a corporation that's always trying to find a way to make the next profit and enforce upon people, you know, unneeded software at times and things like that. You know, at this point, yeah, I have to separate that guy from that company. And when he was running that company, I didn't see any sort of this sort of hint of this fellow who's now in his 50s back when he was in his 40s and 30s running Microsoft.
I am not opposed to him making profit, and I'm not really opposed to him, you know, forcing a product that maybe we don't need, like Windows Media Player, into our software packages or something like that. But I feel that's the exact same situation as Steve Jobs, who was, and I know that, you know, there's like this cult around Steve Jobs that people loved him and blah, blah, blah. He was pretty much a very selfish, borderline wicked person. So why did we flock to his company? The responsibility is ultimately in our hands. Well, I mean, I don't own any Apple products either, but I mean, I don't think we can say that Apple products didn't sell well.
I think all of these points are interrelated. I mean, why do people shop at Walmart? Because it's cheap. Why do people, you know, it's again, back to sort of incentive. You know, you give someone an incentive to do something and they're going to do it. So if I can buy socks, you know, if I'm John Q. Public and I can buy socks for 90 cents at Walmart, or I can go down to the local shop and I've got to pay $3 for them, 99.9% of people are going to go to Walmart. And that's why Walmart is the behemoth that it is. Same thing with Apple. I mean, if Apple's going to deliver to you, to the, you know, just the average consumer, something that is cool, trendy, always works, always does what they want it to do, without any kind of like headache, then they're going to flock to that and take that over something that is probably a superior product, but, you know, would require some sort of fidgeting and some sort of, you know, figuring out how to, you know, download certain things and, you know, and put things together. So, you know, again, I think we're giving the credit, we're giving the public too much credit.
I see no hope as long as we are choosing cool and trendy over long-term beneficial.
Oh, agreed. 1,000% agreed.
You know, I've always seen Apple as kind of being the poor man's luxury item, to tell the truth.
Well,
They can't afford the Lexus, they can't afford this or that, but they can afford an iPhone, and that shows how cool they are.
But that's kind of a weird comparison, because it's pretty much the most expensive computer you can buy.
And people buy them. Graphic designers are all over them all the time.
Well, again, too, and Brian, I think, like, cell phone, like, you know, the electronics are sort of an anomaly in that they are very much an accessory now. I mean, why do people go and spend, you know, $1,000 on a pair of shoes when you can buy a, you know, a perfectly good pair of shoes for $50, you know? They have very much become an accessory, just like a belt, hat, shirt, whatever it is. They are very much who you are and the aura and the, you know, I guess, you know, image you want to portray to the outside world. And that carries a lot of weight in terms of, you know, just people's own self-worth. So that is probably, you know, a lot of what drives Apple. But, you know, if you're talking about it in general in terms of other products that are fungible, then, you know, I think it comes down to just straight economics.
I'll say this, and I think as my kind of final remark, and if you guys have other things you want to add, cool. In the Star Trek future, it's no coincidence that all of the main actors, the bridge crew, the away teams, everyone else, are the officers.
Right.
They take all the risk. They do all of the audacious things. And they command, while the run-of-the-mill crew members never beam down to a planet except to serve as, like, monster fodder.
Red shirts.
Yeah. And I'm not counting myself in the bridge crew or trying to put myself in an elite position, but I'm going to say this. It has never been the case in any society that John Q. Public gives enough of a damn to make a difference. You are going to need an interested segment of the population to step in and say, I want a Star Trek future. I'm willing to take action to get there. People are going to keep shopping at Walmart until Walmart is taken from them. I hate to say it.
Yeah.
People are going to keep doing dumb crap, supporting bad companies, voting for stupid politicians until they're made to do otherwise. And I don't mean at gunpoint, and I don't mean by taking away their rights. I mean by putting something on the menu that you can make appeal to them that is actually in their own interest. I don't know. This makes me sound like an elitist prick. I understand. But man, the average person, they may not be stupid, but they just don't give a damn. And that's kind of the problem.
You're 100% right, and the old saying is true: a person is smart, people are stupid.
So, yeah.
So when you've got this, you know, we are a country of people, and so the basic institutions that we have are just so entrenched and just set up to keep this system running. And just to bring it sort of back to the original point of, you know, of the whole podcast, I mean, I really think that, to your point, Tom, nothing is going to change until something externally or, you know, internally, externally, whatever happens, whether it's a decrease in technology, a stopping of technology, a regression in technology, an environmental disaster, something, until something happens to force us to sit up as people and say, wait a minute, like, we need to really take a look at what we've been doing and what we're going to be doing going forward to make sure that this doesn't happen again. Then it's just going to keep going. I mean, it's a runaway train. It's a snowball that is just going down a hill. And until it hits something, I don't think it's going to stop.
Could not agree more. And that is the bingo statement, I think, of the episode so far. Anything to add, guys?
Well, I just wanted to add one thing, which was I think there is a set of people out there that are that unique niche that are trying to do things above and beyond with the long-term view. And those are the guys that are all in the SpaceX program.
Right. Well, I mean, that's like the Kal-El of Krypton, though. You know what I mean? Like, I mean,
but you know, these are guys that are, they're motivated. They're basically playing around with technologies with, you know, they're in for the long haul, crossing their fingers. They're doing, you know, business 101, which is your, you know, ratio of profit is inverse to risk.
Right.
So high risk, high reward. But then what does everybody try to do is their first step when they run a business? Minimize the risk by somehow trying to maximize the reward in it. It doesn't work that way. And some of these guys are trying to actually put, you know, asteroid mining in there. But there is, you know, there are little pockets of those kind of people with that kind of vision, you know, and thankfully capital to actually try to at least attempt creative destruction.
Right. Well, I mean, you know, that's a good point. And, you know, sort of expanding on the point that I made earlier, you know, my worry is that we're not in the whole frog experiment scenario, you know, the experiment where you put a frog in water and then you just start gradually increasing the temperature. And by the time he realizes that it's killing him or that it's boiling him, it's too late, you know? So are we going to get to some sort of social change before we hit that point of no return? And I mean, there's billions of, you know, millions of books out there that probably deal with this, you know, or, you know, have that sort of scenario, but I don't know, you know, who knows? I mean, I hope not.
I am not hopeful.
Yeah, I know. Me neither.
Well, when it comes to JQ Public, I don't have much hope for that frog scenario either, but...
Yeah, and I will expand upon that just a little bit, only because I know this will get Brian animated. You know, what about the Lester theory? About how, you know, and we've had these conversations, you, me, and Tom, of, you know, everyone needs to just do what's right on their own. Do you think that'll ever be, you know, do you think we'll ever get to that kind of society without someone making us?
We can't get people to not shop at Walmart.
Well, what's your definition of the right thing to some degree? Some of those are tough choices when it comes to, there's a lot of towns, Walmart's the only thing that's left now, unfortunately.
Well, that was 20 Walmart, years ago is when we should have done it.
Right, well, that's because Walmart killed everything else.
So it's much harder now to kind of go back and make those kind of choices. But I'm blessed to that. I work with a lot of people who have that philosophy in mind. I work in the healthcare industry. And that industry just could not, you couldn't work in that industry if they didn't have that sort of attitude of we got to do what's right and I'm putting myself or whatever it is. You can't, you know, you can make excuses, but you can't really not function there without saying, okay, I'm going to put my lunch off for a while because I have to deal with this issue because it matters to somebody and their loved ones.
Ultimately, I think you can get away with doing what's right as long as you're willing to do the right thing and bonk the guy who's not doing right on the head.
Well, you know, I think, you know, what gives me hope is that, like you said, Tom, Chris, there are people out there, I think us included, you know, I drive a hybrid, you know, I'm not living a peacenik, you know, hippie lifestyle. I don't have a compost, you know, heap outside or anything like that. But I do what I can. You know, I recycle. I drive a hybrid even though it's, you know, it costs me more than a regular car. I you know, I try to do what, you know, keep things as green as possible, you know, not run the water, or not, you know, turn off lights when I can. I mean, I think that is just an evolution just like everything else, you know. And there are plenty of people out there that do way more than even I do. And so I think if you teach that to your children and they teach that to their children and ingrain certain values, then, you know, in 5, 10, 15 generations, maybe we'll have a more enlightened culture that will make better decisions. But again, I come back to the frog, you know, experiment. Is it going to be too late?
Yeah, I hope not. But it will certainly be an interesting near future. I predict that we're going to have it. This is just me shooting from the hip, but I can't see. How do I put this? I think we're like sucking the bottom of the milkshake dry with our current oil extraction methods.
Yep.
And
almost literally.
Yeah, seriously. And oil is just, I mean, it's the one that just comes to mind the most often, or the most readily, I should say, but that's one of several factors. Never mind the pollution, never mind the unsustainable farming methods, never mind the sort of economic house of cards that we've built based on the ability to create wealth out of thin air by saying, hey, here's a loan.
Right. Or we could just print some more money.
Yeah. Right. I like to think that we're on a precipice and we can choose either to jump and deploy a parachute or just wait for it to crumble out from under our feet and do nothing.
Right.
In other words, don't prepare at all for the fall.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. That's where I'll leave it. That's my two cents on the thing. And I think that we started off kind of with a mind to discuss a disruption in technology and we veered into sort of a disruption in just the status quo and whether our faith in the status quo is misplaced. I think we all agree here on the Nerdstravaganza podcast that it is.
Absolutely.
People won't do the right thing until it's the easy thing.
Yeah.
Good point.
And just to bring it back to the original show topic, I mean, we might be all just, we might just be way off base, and one of these, you know, crazy consumer, you know, companies that is, we think is destroying America could come up with a revolutionary, you know, atmosphere scrubber that's going to save our environmental issues and, you know, fix our environment. You know, who knows? Maybe technology will be the, you know, will be the saving grace of the day and be that parachute that we need. Who knows? I mean, I guess it just remains to be seen, you know?
Well, there you go, Cam. And I think the assumption right now in most people's mind is that it will be. Technology is going to be there to rescue us from ourselves. And that's kind of the gist of what I wanted to discuss this episode, and I think we kind of did.
Oh, to death.
Yeah. Speaking of the future, though, dear listeners, we've got great news. One thing we can be pretty certain of, at least as far as we're concerned, is that we will be here week after week for the foreseeable future. Why not subscribe to us on iTunes or check us out on Stitcher and rate us favorably?
And you can look forward to our survival tip series on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter. You can join our Google Circle. And you can join the Nerd Extravaganza HQ, which is in no way affiliated with any survivalist groups.
And a very sustainable resource that you can access anytime is our website, nerdstravaganza.com, which has this and every back episode that we've done. And the carbon footprint on an email is very small. So please feel free to send as many emails as you'd like to nerdstravaganza@gmail.com. And if you just want to support a huge shitty corporation, go over to YouTube and check out our videos, video game reviews, board game reviews, movie reviews, and all of our other content.
And with all that said, we wish you
a sustainable tomorrow. Coming next week, how to choose a survival knife.